On behalf of IMC, I'm really delighted to welcome and introduce our teacher for the weekend, Gregory Kramer. Gregory teaches meditation, he writes, he's the founding teacher of the Insight Dialogue community. He's practiced meditation since 1974 and studied with several esteemed monastics, including Anagarika Dhammadina, Venerable Balangoda Ananda Maitreya, Mahanayaka Taro, Achan Sobinamtu, Venerable Punyaji Mahatero, and others. He began teaching meditation worldwide in 1980, and his primary focus since 1995 has been developing and sharing a relational study of the Dhamma and insight dialogue, an interpersonal form of Buddhist insight meditation. And groups in that are now active worldwide. He's also developed Dharma contemplation, a text-based contemplation practice. And he's the author of several books on all these practices. And the most recent is A Whole Life Path, A Lay Buddhist's Guide to Crafting a Dhamma-Infused Life. And that is the theme of this weekend. So with that, I will turn things over to Gregory, and I'll be here in the background. You can chat to me if you have any issues. Have a wonderful weekend. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. As we begin now, this very first moment is always so rich, like you're wondering what I sound like, you see what I look like, and you say, oh, what's he going to say? So like, right at this edge of the moment is our path, our life. So let's see what it's like. Just naming that. Sitting here looking at a screen full of postage stamps, or you might have my head be big, I don't know. Your body feels like this. Obviously, this is a relational experience, my speaking, you're listening right now. So there's a hybrid, you might say, aspects or dimensions of experience. There's your inner world, you know, your thinking, how it feels, the whole universe of your life, right? You can feel that operating if I pause in silence. Every prior moment of your life coming into just this. And now here's this guy talking. And at the same time, it's a relational experience. So it's between us, right? So I'm speaking and you're listening. There's a contact there. And that contact is guiding your mind just by listening to these words, right? And so there's the inner world, there's the relational world. And you might notice, this is a concept, but it's a powerful one, that this inner world of your universe, each of you, bless your little universes, our little universes, our relationship. And we're embedded right now in this social dimension, social construct, a certain country, the economic flow of the whole world, the tensions and dysfunctions of the whole world, just sort of, you know, impacting the relational experience, impacting the individual experience. And it's in this multi-layered experience that we come together specifically to explore suffering and the end of suffering. In this, the suffering of this, within this, and the freedom here, the human possibility. Like, that's not caught, that's not asleep. It's quite a radical teaching the Buddha offered. And perhaps with this introduction, this way I'm talking about it, even without my saying it, perhaps you gain some sense that this very life, the way it feels right now, every moment is impacting that movement towards suffering and the end of suffering. Every moment, put differently, is path. Going the right way or the wrong way, but it's going. you may be inherently skillful right now. That's great. I'm happy for you. And of course, the next moment is conditioned by this moment. So we are working together to condition the next moments, i.e. our lives, towards the wholesome, towards something workable, maybe beautiful, at least less harmful, at least, let's hope. Isn't that why we're here? So, in terms of path factors, I want to begin with calling your attention to the energy that it took for you to show up in your seat right now. So you might reflect on that. For many of us, this thing started at 8 a.m. on a weekend. Wow, that's weird. So you made the effort to get here. On the East Coast, it's 11 a.m, middle of the country, it's 9 and 10 a.m. Anybody's here from Europe, it's 5 or 6 at night, 4 or 5 at night, depends on where you are, Eastern Europe, Western Europe, England. But you made the effort to get here. That's the point. So reflect on that. Feel the motivation of that. Feel the actual, getting up out of bed rather than staying in bed, or eating your breakfast sooner rather than later, or not going down for coffee, or not doing your household cleaning, or whatever Saturday might normally be for you. It's this right now. We're together in it. This is it. You made that decision and you put the effort in. You actually registered, I guess, but you walked over to your computer. Something motivated your body to walk over to your computer or your pad or your phone, to sit down, fiddle with all the digital things, and get here. It wasn't an accident, right? So what is that? What is that? That's the path operating, the path factor specifically of right effort. In basic terms, the effort, the energy, the vitality to decrease the unwholesome, to increase the wholesome. That's what right effort is. And it's already operating in your life. And every one of those moments where you decided to register, the energy that goes to your mouse click or your track pad click or your screen click, that energy is coming from the mind, right? Click, register. The mind is telling it to do that, as it were. I mean, it's a gross simplification, but boom, and that is coming from a volition. So the mental energy to get here. It's like a sense of, wow, this must be worth doing. You don't really know that yet. Maybe you're gaining some confidence because of what I'm saying makes sense. But some sort of faith that this is at least worth a try. And there's an image behind it. Dhamma image, path image, sense of human possibility image. If you didn't think that it would do any good, if you thought it would be a waste of time, you would not show up. You've got other things to do. Everyone does. So sense into that feeling of not only I'm going to do this, you have done this, here you are. So right effort is flowing through all of this, an inclination to the wholesome and the effort, the energy to enact it, to do it. It's quite stunning, really, isn't it? So the path is alive in you. This is, you're already practicing right effort. I'm just naming it. It's all I'm doing. So it's a Dhamma frame for the wholesome. But how do you know, like, what choices to make? Well, I mean, why did you click on register? Why did you show up this morning? Why are you sitting here listening to these words right now? These words, like, as I speak, why? Sense into your own heart, into your own mind. Why are you listening? And as you sense into your own mind, why am I listening? Why am I here? How are you knowing? How are you investigating? What makes that possible right now? What capacity? Wow. Sati, mindfulness. With talking, with listening, you're mindful. So, right effort is operating, the energy to show up, to listen, to give attention, as the Buddha says, or as it's translated in the canon, to lend ear. You're lending ear. You're observing the mind as you lend ear. So mindfulness is operating. Mindfulness aimed towards the good, right mindfulness, skillful mindfulness, not just directing your attention, but the sense of the whole so-called sati sampajanya, the whole purpose, the whole body-mind experience of knowing the mind, knowing experience. So right effort is present, the energy, the enacting, the right mindfulness is present. But how do you know? Why did you choose to do this instead of, like, go down to your local coffee roaster and, you know, juice up a little bit, or lie back on the couch and, I don't know, whatever. You chose to do this. Why? Why would you do this instead of something else? There's a sense of purpose, as I said, right? So let's kind of look underneath that. What's operating as you reflect, as you make those decisions? Something like, this has some worth. Dhamma has some worth. has some value? How do you know that? What's going on? What's going on in your mind that you would know or sense or believe, or not just the faith aspect? I'm talking about there's something operating that allows you to discern this is useful, this is not so useful. Go watch entertaining television, go see Gregory talk about Dhamma. You've made a choice. Why? So some sense of Dhamma, of purpose, is coming from an understanding. You've been somehow touched by the Buddha's teachings or touched by your meditation practice. And that gives you a basis in experience, body, mind, knowing, there's something here. That body, mind, knowing that knows that this liberative process is possible is right view. So as we speak now, and as I point out all these things, you and I, we all together, all of us together, are practicing right view, cultivating wise understanding right now. That's what this is, the voice of another and wise attention. In the classical teachings of the Buddha, those are the necessary conditions for the development of right view. And we're doing exactly that. We're enacting the path factor of right view. And it's just like this. It's, you know, doesn't need fireworks, doesn't need even the big fat books, you know, big fat Dhamma books, like, you know, wow, that's a book of right view, huh? Big Dhamma book. Just this. This is developed. Do you feel that? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, thank you for when you shake your head, I actually know you hear me. Appreciate that. So, see what I'm saying? So here we are, cultivating right view. Some degree of right view brought you here, and that's sort of the momentum forward of the path as right view and practice, right effort, reflected on by right mindfulness, sort of moves forward, and the path gains some pith, some body in your life. It's that simple. So why does it seem so difficult so often? It's a good question, don't you think? I think it is anyway. I mean, look at the contrary forces. The forces of ignorance and delusion are so big. They're enormous. So, you know, we're all familiar these days with the eyeball industry, you know, people trying to get your eyeball onto their website or their media output. And those are a lot of really smart people trying to help you be deluded. That's like their game in life. That's what they get paid money for. Up the numbers, get the people. That's you and me. To look at our stuff, to get completely like lapped up by it, swallowed by it. And the Buddha's got a word for that, you know, avijja, ignorance. You go blank. And then as soon as you go blank, you're fair game. I mean, you're just like, you know, like you're a soft embryo, but you're in tossing down like a wild rushing river of society, getting, you know, pummeled by the stones and sticks of that. Not only it's a push for your attention, it's a push for your time and energy, you know. That's what employers, they want you to do a certain thing to contribute to the economy that keeps the system going. Which is not necessarily evil, understand, because there's also a lot of good that's done. But then comes the high pressure, and then the being awake in the middle of that is, well, not so easy. And we're answering that question, why, if the path is right here, why do we forget? You understand? So that's where we have the value of Dhamma teachings that stand outside that system. That's the purpose. The Dhamma is also constructed. I was so upset when I learned that, that the Dhamma is a construct. It's just another system. It's just so brilliant. And everything I've touched about it seems absolutely true. it's more concepts, you know? But it stands outside, at least my conditioned concepts of life. Perhaps that may be true for you, that there's something fresh here, that there's something different and certainly countercultural when we look at our world of economy, values, politics, ethics. So here we are. This is our work together, like to discover the existence of the path already here and the increase of the path to bring about the good. And we can each talk about what we mean by good, but at the very least, less stress and suffering, which is mostly because of our sick society. That's what gets all the press in Buddhism, is reducing stress, because it's sort of an essential first move. But if you're listening to this particular talk and you've given up a weekend, I suspect you're also looking at subsequent moves in addition to stress reduction. Stress reduction is part of it. There's a lot more. So our work together in the next 2 days, it's kind of funny to put the bounds on it, but I think we should be realistic, you know? We've got 2 days. Two sessions each day. The middle of the day, you can go off and be deluded, or you can practice some of the stuff I suggest and see what happens, right? The choice is yours. Then we'll come back together. You'll be either starting where we left this morning, or you'll be starting further ahead, because that, 6 hours in between was productive for you. So it's a retreat in that sense, but only to the extent that each of us makes it so. And our job, or our intention on this retreat, is to gain this understanding of the path as always operating, always potential, and, if I may, to perhaps understand that if we view this path as only operating within the confines of my island universe of this consciousness, this subjective mind, this internal me, if that's the sense of the path, then at the very least, I hope you get a sense of how difficult that is. But ideally, you would also get the sense of how much easier it is if you realize that it's functioning relationally and socially. That's what really makes a whole life path workable, frankly, to escape from the individualistic, heroic mindset. So we'll be practicing, but we'll also be looking at the Dhamma of that. Why did the Buddha say, I'll be talking about this more tomorrow morning, why did the Buddha say, the whole of the holy life is spiritual friendship? This is a spiritual friendship relationship now between you, all of us. Right now, I'll point to between myself and you, you and myself, this between that we're making together, where the Dhamma flows through with language, with my intentions, touches your mind, That's a spiritual relationship, you might say, or an admirable, noble, beautifying relationship that we have. But so is potentially all of your social encounters, especially your close ones, can be understood at least in how they function on the path. Not everybody has to be on the path with you. Obviously, it's not going to happen. My wife doesn't care about Buddhism other than, you know, sort of the usual response of someone who's been damaged by institutional religion early in life, which is stay away, you know, which is understandable. But we have what I consider a relationship that definitely contributes to this effacement, this erosion of this human qualities that kind of went sideways, like we all have. So I'd like to soon invite us into our first moments of insight dialogue practice. And there's a reason I'm doing this, by the way. I want to be as transparent as I can. When we are called to reflect together, and I'm thinking in insight dialogue, we say, what is my experience? I'm going to offer you a contemplation on this path stuff, right? In the same way that I was pausing and inviting you to observe your own mind, you'll be doing that in small groups, but with a particular inquiry. And the pause that I'm about to kind of offer to you, the sense of how to practice, is a way of inviting the mind, when you pause, to see what's true that you would speak. That very moment is a practice of sati, practice of mindfulness. Importantly, in order to speak something, it has to come out from that vagueness of sensing, or, you know, in the misty regions of the heart, of the mind. It has to come into language enough to speak, just like I'm doing with you, and then you hear. And in order to listen to each other, we have to open up and in mindfulness, like what's being said now, to really let it in. And in that process, the Dhamma comes alive. If we spend 2 hours only in silent practice and my speaking at you, that doesn't happen. It's a different learning process. It's a different mental, emotional, body-mind process, insight dialogue. It's a practice of right view. And the energy that arises between two or more to reflect and grow the mindfulness and the samadhi. So there's a purpose to it. So let's talk about this pause for a moment. So even as I pause now, perhaps that's an opportunity to, oh, what is present moment experience? I pause. This is how it feels in the body. This is how it feels in the mind. But as a speaker, when I pause, I'm finding what's true now to speak. I'm not just speaking from habit. So when you speak and you reflect on this contemplation, you pause, you bring the contemplation to mind, see what would be spoken, and you begin to speak. And you pause while you're speaking sometimes also to see what's still true, what's fresh. Are you just launching? Like it goes ballistic, right? You know, you've got something to say, boom, And you've kind of checked out while your mouth is talking. We all know how to do that. We're very good at it. We've overlearned speaking and listening. So we can check out, split, and it just happens. Even if we were mindful at the moment of gathering it, right? So you pause. Oh yeah, okay, that's still true. Maybe it's not. So you're really with it. You stay, the sati, the mindfulness goes right through the speech. It's possible, trust me. You don't have to trust me, find out for yourself, but meanwhile, trust me a little. And then when you're done speaking, pause. So the Buddha, speaking to his son Rahula, said, you know, reflect before, during, and after an action, before, during, and after speech. Is this what I'm about to say true and useful and so on? And if so, go ahead. Is what I'm saying true and useful and so on? Non-harmful to beings? Yeah, well, then you can continue. Pause, reflect after speaking. Is this true, useful, non-harmful, and so on? And if it isn't, you know, have some remorse, maybe, you know, talk to some friends about it. You got, you know, work on it. And if it is true and useful, non-harmful, beneficial, and so on, and this is a great little stock phrase, I love it, then you can be happy and glad training day and night in wholesome states. So that's pausing before, during, and after speaking, writ large by the Buddha. Pause. So actually my suggestion, especially as you're learning the practice, but really it's helpful all along, literally offer yourself mentally the word pause, because you're establishing a key that, you know, just with that one word, it's got all of these teachings that I'm now offering you. It's got the sati, it's got the reflection, it's got the, you know, so pause. Here's the investigation I'll be giving in a moment, the inquiry, the contemplation, and so on. And as you listen, what does it mean to pause while you listen? You're not talking, so why pause? You're pausing from the activities of the habit mind. So all the, you know, so like, oh, well, that's really interesting. Oh my God, I would never do it like that. All the judgments, all the parallel thinking that you've got going on, you know, or maybe you've just gone off, you know, to your vacation in Mexico in your mind. Pause from that and show up again, you know, or perhaps, you know, you're actually paying pretty good attention, but you offer yourself pause and it's like gets brighter, brighter. If any of you have LED light bulbs on a dimmer and you've noticed sometimes it goes, gets a little brighter all at once. Or if you've got, Wi-Fi controlled light bulbs, and every now and then, you know, you might say, you know, turn my room red or make it lighter or something. It goes, bish! It's kind of like that. Pause while you're listening and it can actually get brighter. So that's a capacity we have. That's meditating, right? That's what you do when you meditate. So this is not a communication practice. It's a meditation practice. Pause is this foundation. We'll go further later. Pause as a practice. And the reflection I'd like to offer is where am I noticing in my life the checking out, the avijja, the ignorance, the blindness, where I just move into and function, perhaps for very long periods of time from habit. And also, where do I notice the sense of possibility? Like it doesn't have to be like this. It may be in times that you actually do wake up out of it. Or it may be that you have a life that has a lot of delusion, like most of us do. But then you go off on retreat and it's like, oh, then you touch something. But maybe you can sense it in your life too. So where do I notice the functioning from, working from ignorance? Where do I notice the awakening in my very life? So you'll be in groups of three. There might be some groups of two. In which case, the first person will go for speak for, let's just start with a short 4 minutes. Then the next person will speak for 4 minutes. And if it's a group of three, the next person will speak for 4 minutes. If it's a group of two, then you can open up into the shared, you know, form of open dialogue. After the three goes, then you'll have 6 minutes altogether of not taking turns. Insight dialogue mostly is not taking turns, but this is a good way to learn and practice. It really supports the online practice as well. So when you first get together in the breakout room, take a moment. You'll be given a little extra time. Take that first minute to decide who's going to speak first, second, and third. And then just to get resettled in the body. Then the first person will speak, and so on. There will be prompts that come from the Zoom host that will restate the contemplation, but I hope it's been clear to you so far. I'll say it again in a moment. And then we'll all come back together, of course, in a little bit. Okay. So just to reiterate, right before you go into practice, giving primacy to pausing, even more than the topic. Be more interested right now, at least as interested, I should say, in the meditation, in meditating together, what it's like to pause as you listen, as you speak. Where's the sati? Where's the waking up? And when you pause, you offer the mind this contemplation. Where in my life am I sort of flowing along in ignorance, in the blindness? Any of the stress that comes with that, or just being checked out or unavailable to life? Where do I notice the waking up? Where do I find that? What's that like? And pausing as you speak, pausing as you listen. Have good practice. So maybe we'll take just a moment now before we take some time to rest, take care of the body, a little practice in the form of drinking and using toilets and so on. Just to see if there's anything that you've noticed yet about your path, or perhaps just your practice being in meditation with another, anything you noticed about that. You could, if you want, raise your Zoom hand. There's too many screens for me to be guaranteed that I'll see you if you just raise your hand this way. So you know how to do that. Does anybody care to share any observations?
Rudy, you can open your mic so we can hear you. Rudy, you're muted. Yes.
Thank you.
You can talk, Rudy.
I didn't have the intention to talk, but but here I am. So I would like to say that I don't know how to raise my hand.
Okay. Okay.
Reactions.
Yeah, on the bottom of your screen, there's a, to the far right, there's something that says reactions, and I guess it's there, huh? Hand raising is there? Yes, at the bottom, very, yeah, there it is.
Oh. Anything?
Yeah. Okay, any, good, thank you. Anything else about, any observations about either your practice or questions about your path so far before we go forward? And of course, you know, now that we're stopping asking questions, the whole life path has stopped. This is not actually registering in your mind in any way. I'm being completely facetious. So this is all path. We just have this sort of checking out routine that we do. It's like, oh, this doesn't really matter. Well, look, you're 2 minutes closer to death than you were 2 minutes ago. I see Trudy's really laughing at that one because she and I are both facing death, you know? It's one of the messengers of the Buddhas, you know, five messengers, aging, illness, death. This is it, guys. This is it.
Greg Larry has his hand up.
Ah, I didn't see that. Thank you. Thank you, Jean. Yeah, Larry, go ahead. And unmute, yeah. Good.
Ah, hi, Gregory. Thank you for leading this workshop. So the concept of ignorance and awakening are definitely heart-pumping, beating. Ignorance and awakening, very challenging concepts. It was hard for me to drop in there, especially to ignorance.
Yes.
But what I'm learning more about by studying Insight Dialogue is the three path factors of mindfulness, wisdom teachings, and spiritual friendship. And so coming from a background in MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction, and also just my bias that spiritual practice was all about meditating and finding calmness and peace and managing my like nervousness. So it's just very interesting to explore both spiritual friendship's a little easier, but really finding the place of wisdom teachings and the Dharma as a framework or a way to a part of my path. So anyway, I pause. Thank you.
It's a beautiful contribution, Larry. That's just that jump that you just talked about. If we, all of us, leave this morning's practice, let alone this, you know, the weekend, with just that jump, that would be fantastic. So, yeah, Mary.
I just want to express my gratitude for your class and my gratitude for not canceling out. you know, I signed up. I thought, okay, I need, this is something I really need. I really need to know what to do all day long with myself. As soon as I signed up, resistance, just, I didn't want to do it. I came very close to canceling out. And then at the last minute, I say, oh, just wait, just wait. Even to this setting the alarm last night, getting up. I mean, I came so close to backing away from this. But, you know, as sleepy and tired as I was, as soon as I clicked in and you started in, I'm just, whatever it is that kept me here, I'm very grateful. Mm. So thank you very much.
Mm. So let's, before we, I hear from Gail in just a moment, let's each of us pause for a moment and say, whatever it is that kept me here, that Mary just offered us, maybe pause for a moment and sense into your own experience right now. What's keeping you here? Some sense of possibility, perhaps, some sense of direction. This is going to be really key to this next path factor. So really sense into that. What's keeping me here? There's something in the mind, in the body mind, the heart, something that knows or feels, doesn't know in the rational mind, something feels value. What's that feel like? Do you feel a sense of direction in it? Can you feel a, at least I do. I almost want to lean into it. I feel it carrying me. Do you know what I mean? Is this, am I just talking to myself here? Does anybody know what I mean? Okay, thank you. So there's like sense into that. Okay, so thank you for that gift, Mary. Yeah, Gail. You're muted. Yeah. Okay, got it.
I'm muted.
No, now you're not. You're good.
Good to see you again, Gregory, and good to see everybody. You know, and my comment relates to this relational thing we're doing, which is that while I was talking, when it was my turn, and relating just a very simple thing about not saying something that I could have said that wouldn't have been helpful. And it's not saying it. So it was very simple. And in the process of saying it, I started talking about what it got me in touch with, you know, which was in this case more affection and kindness toward my husband, who's trying to help me but ordering me. And I have a habitual response to that I didn't, that's what I stopped. But just, in the process, I just started to feel this heart part, you know, that why what would be the purpose of protesting being ordered? Sometimes there would be a purpose, but certainly wasn't in this case. And the response of my other two partners and just the presence of it, of all of us, just brought me to my heart. I just had a lot of tears sort of hovering and heart feelings about it and express those. And of course that helped too, to wake me up to the heart element here. So, and that feels like part of waking up as opposed to being ignorant.
Right.
Yeah, because it was such a surprise.
Yeah.
I didn't know all this was in here.
Thank you. Yeah, that. So now let's. I'm sorry, but everyone says such profound things, but I just want to point out something that Gail just said. I didn't know that this was in here. So pause for a moment and just recognize how what you're actually mindful of and what you think is just, it's like the bare blue atmosphere around the earth. It's so thin in the vastness of the mind. It's like, we think we know what's going on in the mind. Yeah, right. Just the bare emergent experience of this is what I'm thinking. Just a little tiny, like the apple skin on the apple, you know? So thank you. So there's four, I was just gonna say four more, now we have five more. This is all wonderful. And I also wanna go on with teaching. So just a request to be parsimonious would be great. William, you're next.
Thank you very much, and for everyone else for being here. I had a real sort of self-enlightening experience during the breakout group from what one of my conversation partners, Insight Dialogue, said. She said when she's being getting carried away with things and being less mindful, she stops. When she pauses, she feels how she is in her body. How does she feel in her body? Mm. And I realized the extent to which when I'm lost or when I wake up from being lost, I wake up in my mind. And I don't even think about how am I realize I've been lost and I think about that rather than checking in, how's my body feeling? So it was a great lesson for me. I know I've always kind of lived mostly in my mind, but right there is a perfect opportunity for me to let my mind tell me, my body tell me how I'm doing something besides just my mind.
Beautiful. Okay. Yeah, thank you, William. Francesca.
Hi. I will be on a straight line. Why am I here? Mm. Because my teacher invited me, and I have a lot of trust on her.
Right.
And then I went to follow Buddha's advice. And I looked for you in the internet. I found you talking to Google people. And I said, okay, seems like valuable. Mm. So that made me come. And today I have already got all the value of the effort. And I said it in the breakout room when I tell them, okay, so I have what I was. The first thing I wanted to have here is some value for my time. And the value is pause, stop, look, check. And that's going to change my life. Ah. So that's why I'm staying here, because I already have something very valuable.
Thank you. Ah, that's beautiful. Thank you for giving that gift back to us, Francesca. Catherine.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to share what I realized in just a short time. Everything which came to my mind since I started to listen to you, and I came here, I think, out of curiosity first, but then there's this loop, there's curiosity and excitement. Then pretty quickly, there's impatience, like I want to start something, to do something, to feel something very quickly. Then I stay there and I continue to listen, and then there's this feeling of being lost, which lasts for a while. Then there's determination, which leads to gratitude, and then the loop starts again, curiosity, excitement, impatience. So it's so really interesting. So it's really, really interesting. I have a lot of material to work on, I think. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I get dizzy almost listening. But isn't that how we all are? I mean, we all have this and then this. And then, you know, we're all
exactly.
Like that. We're all like that. It's like, the very notion that we would sit down to meditate and be still with our eyes closed and expect the mind to just stop all that stuff. It's torture. It's a you know, and let alone self-judgment. Oh, I'm a bad meditator. And formal meditation has a very powerful purpose and a role in the path. Right mindfulness, right samadhi are only, you know, a fragment of the path, but they're very powerful fragment of the path. So we're one of the things I hope that we leave with by the end of our retreat is a sense of the whole path, including the powerful role of what can cut through that process that was just being described of, you know, the mind shooting from one thing to another. It's quite a powerful effect. Yona, yeah.
Mute. I just simply want to say that the pause applied to speech is so helpful for right speech, the path factor of right speech. Thank you. Just pausing before, in the middle, and the end, and reflecting, is this true? Is this helpful? And all the other things. So I appreciate that very, very much.
Wow, beautiful. Yeah, straight from the Buddha. Yeah, straight out. Yeah. One of the things I like about that image, Yona, in the suttas, is that the Buddha is speaking to Rahula, who's his son. You know, it's like, okay, son, pause before, during, and after, and it gives you a sense of the humanity of it. You know, and then of course we apply it as a Dhamma teaching 2,500 years later, and it can take on the weight of a world religion. But it's really this very human teaching. So I'm glad you got that. And last one would be Robin. Yeah.
Hi, Greg. So what I saw arising when I was pausing and listening was this impulse that I didn't recognize that I had before of wanting to somehow nod or agree or let the person speaking see or know that I'm with them, I'm tracking, and you mentioned that a little bit in your instruction. And what I recognized the second I noticed that I was having that impulse, I paused and recognized that when I'm doing that, it's taking me out of being present. You know, it's almost like making it about me. Even though I was listening, there was this impulse to want to acknowledge or something, and it was very distracting. And so seeing that, it removes me from being present there in the conversation. It's pretty powerful, and that I don't need to do that. So thank you for that instruction and teaching.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's a very good example, Robin, of one of the valuable aspects of interpersonal meditation. Things come up to be known and released in contact with another person that may not come up when you're sitting alone and in silence. We all know of the experience of meditating and then getting up, and you may be calm and not lovely when you're meditating, you get up and then all of a sudden the mind is frantic or you're angry or the habit mind is coming back and you're being unkind to people, you know, just functioning socially. And then of course there's the plethora of stories of, you know, the master in the cave. It's all thought of as being all awakened and spiritually advanced, comes out and starts screaming at people because he or she has not ever tested their mindfulness or their samadhi. They have not tested their, or even their morality. in the actualities of life. So if you ever think that life as a professional or life as a parent or a caretaker is not path, boy, think again. It's a powerful path. The concept of what is path is our problem, not the life. If we bring effort towards the good, it's path, but what does it look like? And what's the purpose? What's the sense of direction? And that's what we're talking about now, the sense of direction. Remember that moment we took a little bit ago? It's like, oh, I can feel this, something like something is making me stay was what that was framed around. But right now, even the sense of all of us being together, the purpose of this Zoom world that we've created, this temporary community, has a purpose. Sensing the aim of our time together is what I'm talking about, right? So let me put it in an even bigger frame, and I hope you forgive me for asking these big questions, but why waste time? What's the aim of your life? Where are you headed? What are you, what am I, besides another bee collecting honey in the hive so that those that are higher up in the hierarchy can have more money or something, or so that the political system can function? What is the purpose, the direction of your life? When the Buddha spoke about this, he spoke about basic, wholesome intentions for the overarching direction of our lives. Non-anger or metta, the basic human manifesting of friendliness and care. Non-harming or non-cruelty or compassion. And this is a path factor. So I haven't changed subjects at all. I'm just giving the Buddha's language to that sense of direction and purpose. And then the third classic intention is non-sensual obsession, which is to say a kind of relinquishment or renunciation or release or letting go. So those three, the relinquishment or renunciation, the kindness, the care, and the compassion. Sama sankappa, the path factor of right intention. So, once again, we're challenged in the purpose of our gathering for this little retreat, this couple of days together. We're challenged to understand, how do I live that? How do I function as a path factor? How do I actually practice, develop, cultivate right intention? And we're doing it now by way of right view. Do you see how what I'm saying, the things that I'm saying, have meaning? You understand them. And by understanding them, you're reflecting on, oh, what is the aim of my life? So we're reflecting on the aim of our life and maybe drawing it into clearer focus. So right now, through right view, we're cultivating right intention. You see that? See how we're looking at, like, what is this direction? Okay, good. Now, how many of you have somewhere around your house or your office either photographs of someone you love or a Buddha image, or some flowers, or a dog or a cat. Let me see your hands. Any of those things. Any windows opening to nature? Yeah, pretty much everyone, right? What, why? Why do you have that Buddha image or that picture of someone? Brings them to mind, yeah? It brings it to mind. And that inclines the heart towards the goodness of that thing. Either that dog, nice dog. What is it when you, you know, do this to your dog? Nice dog, that's a good dog. You're cultivating kindness, and it grows towards living beings. It's a living being, you know, little living being pooping in the yard or whatever it does. What are you doing when you look at a picture of someone you love? Now, it can have the identification because it makes you feel good about, you know, me, this is my child and they're so successful. You could do that kind of, you know, self-making thing. But it can also just be warmth, the warming of the heart. Let's look at that.
I'm just going to go out and water that.
Okay, go water that. And then let's say you have a Buddha image. Or if you happen to be, let's say, Christian, maybe you have a Jesus image or something like that. Why? Same thing. It reminds you, inclines the mind, remind, it brings it to mind. The mind is aimed in that direction. So, for example, right here, this, you know, flower, these two Buddhas, a Buddha and a Tara talking to each other, you know. Aims the mind towards what that symbolizes. So you're making skillful use of the constructing mind to aim the heart. What about spiritual friendships? Do any of you have friends that you would say, this person brings out what's good in me? I do. I've got some. Or how about right here? Any of you have any? Yeah, good. I want to see some hands. Right, thank you. So that is a practice of right intention also. One who has good friends can be expected to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. That's a canonical quote. So that's aiming you. When you're with such a person, you aim them, they aim you, and you get this shared intention, which is exactly what all of us, 107 of us right now, are doing together. This is both cultivating right intention and reinforcing the wholesome intentions that each of us brings as a group, focusing in the mind towards Sammasankappa. Right? Can you, is this making sense? Okay, so this is what we're doing. Right view is the, when you understand something a certain way, it inclines the mind towards that goodness, right? So this is our next reflection, which will necessarily be short, so you'll have to bear with me on that. But I do want you to have some time to explore it in insight dialogue. You'll go back to your same groups, and you'll only have, let's say, well, let's, Yeah, let's stay 4 minutes again. 4 minutes, and then all together, only 4 minutes. Nah, I want you to have more time. 6 minutes. 4, 4, 4, 6. Okay? And the investigation is pausing and especially giving attention to kind of relaxing and becoming aware of being in relation. Pause, relax, and open. So notice the person you're speaking with on the screen. Notice the internal experience. Notice the space in between. Pause, relax, and see what it's like to be in relation as you speak into the relationship. pay attention to that opening, that spaciousness or narrowness. Pay attention to that dimension of experience. I would usually give, you know, an hour's worth of instruction on this, but we'll settle for 2 minutes. Pause, relax, and give attention to open, to the relational field, and speak into that. And the question is, where do I notice the operating of an overarching intention in my life? And how am I supporting it? Like, what things do I notice in my life that are contributing to it? You can notice if you want what's goes against it, you know, but I wouldn't spend too much time on that. Plus, it's easy to do that. So take advantage of the practice and your practice partners to pause, relax, and open, and make the space to discover, how am I supporting the aim, the wholesome aim, the intention, the overarching intention of this very life? Let your practice support you. Let your practice partners support you. Because right now, you're together in the wholesome intention, the shared intention to discover the Dhamma as living in your life. It's a wholesome intention operating right now. You might notice it. And if you do, feel free to speak it. Pause. Relax. Open. I hope your practice was beneficial. And I also hope that the next 6 hours of practice are beneficial. I'm almost hesitant to use this word practice because it makes it sound like some separate thing. But living the path for these next 6 hours, for those of you who have opted to engage with this, you're going to be supported by periodic text messages. And they relate to the things that we've been exploring together. And when you receive them, you can ignore them, or you can, you know, let them ping you in a certain direction. In the mind, in the heart. See how that goes for you. You can know that many of your spiritual friends here are also receiving them and exploring this. And when we come back together at 4 o'clock West Coast time, this will be conditioning the moment, conditioning our time together. So in that sense, it's a community practice as well as a bunch of individual practices. Also, of course, every time you receive a text, it's coming from somewhere. That's an obvious statement, but think about it. It's coming from human mind. I mean, you know, my mind, Jean's mind, our hearts are like, That is the spiritual friendship practice of right view. The voice of another through the text being received by you. And when you read it, if you give wise attention to it, the circuit is connected. Wise attention and the voice of another come together. And that's how right view is practice. That's specifically the conditions for the arising of samadhiti, right view. So when you get a text, this is no longer someone saying, you know, you want to go for coffee, or when are you going to get that report to me, or whatever. This is like, hello, we are friends on the path. We are enacting the path together right now. So it's an act of spiritual friendship as you receive it, and then you can engage further as you see fit. Again, the individual, the relational practices and functioning together. And of course, in the context of society, but right now, we're just focusing on that part of it. So when we join together again later today, we will further explore our path factors and, most importantly, the sense of the path as a living experience, as greatly supported by recognizing the relational nature of the human experience and the power of that in enlivening and sustaining the path. And to the extent that you treat this like a retreat and maybe don't do so much of the utter frantic stuff that maybe sometimes you do, that would be great. Of course, it's up to you. But it is not intended that you, let's say, just do sitting and walking meditation all day, because one of your challenges and opportunities with this retreat is to recognize, like, while you're out with a friend doing something, or while you're going to visit someone or doing your food shopping, look in any moment, do what I call a path factor scan or path scan. What path factors are operating now? I'm reflecting, I'm noticing, that's kind of a little bit of right view going on just as I think about it. What is the aim of my heart? And by looking at that intention, maybe in noticing that in some ways it inclines towards harmlessness, even right there in the supermarket, you know, making harmless choices of food is a practice of harmless intention and right livelihood, right use of resources. You know, if you go and just enjoy yourself in nature, go take a walk, noticing how, oh, wow, this is contributing to calming down, to tranquility and samadhi. So a little bit of aiming or the noticing the contribution of the path factor of sama samadhi, even though it's not deep concentration, right? So that's fine. Or whenever you happen to notice the mind and how it's functioning, oh, what do you know? I'm practicing right mindfulness here, the aim towards suffering and the end of suffering, towards that understanding. So how is the path alive over these next 6 hours? And of course, we'll be in the next today and tomorrow giving you more sense of how to do that, because you'll understand and feel the path more, right? But now's your time to dive in. So as we close, just reflecting that as we do this, it's for our own benefit and for the benefit of others as well. That's what the Buddha specifically said, that one who inclines and aims and works for the good of oneself is very good. One who works and develops this good for others is very good. But the highest, the best, and the most excellent is one who works for the benefit of both oneself and others. So many beings are suffering in this world, and everything we're doing contributes towards the good and the reduction of that suffering. May all beings, without exception, share in the merits of our practice, the benefits of our practice together. May all beings be free. May there be peace. May there be peace. May there be peace. So thank you, friends. If there's any question about signing up for the text, Perhaps you can, I don't know, Chris, email someone or.
I'll stay on a minute. And if you want to ask right now, and yeah, if you have questions, stay around and I'll convey some information.
And I'll see the rest of you in about 6